Okay, well, thanks, Chen Chen, for introduction, and it's always a great pleasure to be here at Parameter. So today I'm going to tell you some of our recent work on, well, icing anions in Majorana dimer models. I will explain what I mean by Majorana dimer models shortly. So this work is done in collaboration with some great physicists, and Braden Will is a, I think I should use this thing. The graduate student at UCSB, and he's on job market this year. And Jung Ho Sun is an undergraduate in Caltech, now graduate student at Stanford. And the rest of the list probably familiar to some of you, many of you, I guess. Okay, so now let's get to the point. So the main player of the talk will be Majorana zero modes. I'll sometimes just refer to them as Majoranas for brevity. And we know that electron complex fermion or a fermion annihilation operator can be a creation operator in this case, can be written as two Majorana zero modes, two Majorana modes, which can be thought as a real and imaginary part of the complex fermion. And this is just a mathematical relation and doesn't really have any physical significance. And sometimes we say that you need two Majoranas to make one Dirac fermion. And the occupation number of the fermion mode can be written as a product of the two Majorana fermions and with I gamma 1, gamma 2 is sometimes what we call fermion parity of this mode because it's just 0 or 1 or plus minus 1 for the parity. So there has been a lot of progress recently in realizing Majorana zero modes, quote zero modes, in condensed matter systems. These are isolated Majorana modes that are usually found as certain defects in the topological phase, such as the boundary of a one-dimensional topological superconductors or vortices in two-dimensional topological superconductors. So it's not really my go to comment on these recent experiments, although there has been growing evidence that we do see Majorana modes in these one-dimensional, quasi-one-dimensional systems, but this just serves as a motivation for our work. So what we want to ask, or we want to imagine, that what happens if you have an array of Majorana modes. We want to ask what kind of many-body physics you can do if you have a lot of Majorana modes. So imagine you have a lattice of Majorana modes. Imagine you have, for example, a vortex lattice in a two-dimensional chiral superconductors. And then each vortex will host a Majorana zero mode. And they are in a certain lattice, like triangular lattice or honeycomb lattice, depending on the system. And well, we'll represent each zero mode by a Majorana operator satisfying this kind of anti-commuting algebra. So if we don't have any interactions between the Majorana modes, well, we just have a huge degeneracy between them. And just as many other cases in condensed matter systems, once you have a huge degeneracy, they're usually lifted by quantum fluctuations or interactions. And the simplest thing you can do to lift the degeneracy completely is to just pairwisely turn on coupling between the Majoranas. For example, well, this just illustrates one such configuration where you pair up all the Majorana modes. When I say pair them up, I actually mean turning on a coupling just in this form, I gamma 1, gamma 2. And you can easily see that this is the only Hermitian operator you can write down if you just have two zero modes. And once they are paired up, this particular complex fermion formed out of these two zero modes have a definite occupancy, occupation number given by this fermion parity operator. So, however, here it's important to know which state we are actually in, whether the I gamma 1 gamma 2 operator is equal to 1 or minus 1, because they correspond to opposite fermion parities of this pair. So really, we need to have directed arrows between these two zero modes instead of just like an undirected arrow as we have in dimer, usual spin dimer case, to indicate which of the two fermion parity state we have for the pair. So I'll draw these arrows to indicate that I have a pair of Myron modes in a definite parity state, and I'll call these pairs as Myron dimers. So now we want to ask, well, no, we can get a gap state, but that's not really interesting. But the natural question is, can we have some kind of resonating balanced bond state where you have a superposition of all possible dimers configurations on the lattice of Majorana zero modes? And well, naively, one can just imagine writing down a wave function where you have such a superposition, but this is actually quite questionable because, as I have mentioned, each of these pairs could have different from parities depending on how you draw the arrow, basically. So naively, if I just assign some random arrows to these zero modes, pairs of zero modes, then very likely you may end up superposing different states with opposite from parities. And as we know, in the fermionic system, from parities are always conserved, and any physical state must have a definite from parity. There's no way you can have a state which is a superposition of two basis states with opposite parity. Therefore, this is the first problem we need to solve if we want to actually write on state, is to make sure that each dimer configuration that shows up in a wave function must have the same from parity. So how do we do this? Well, first we need to know how do we count the from parity if I've given a certain dimer configuration. And actually there's a very simple rule to do that. So let's say I have, let me fix one of the dimer configuration as a reference state. I'll just compare all other states to this reference state. And to count the firm parity of this state, we just put the two pictures on top of each other or form the transition graph of the dimer states. The rules of the dimer tells you that once you overlay these two pictures, you always get closed loops. I mean, this is also a loop, just has two edges connecting the same bond. And then we look at each loop, and imagine you are walking on a loop, just counting the number of arrows that point towards you. And if the number is odd, that means this little loop has even number of fermions, I mean, compared to a reference state. So the total parity is just, you count all the loops, counting how many arrows are pointing towards you if you go along the loop, and then add up all the results. So this is a very simple rule. And now the question is clear. So we want to make sure that all the loops have the same parity under this clockwise odd rule. And turns out that you can do this. You can just do it kind of geometrically. Before we even talk about Majorana, just imagine the lattice. On the lattice, all the edges are assigned some kind of arrows, and this becomes basically a combinatorics problem to find the arrows satisfying such a clockwise odd rule. And these arrows, this problem has been solved many years ago. I mean, this well-known solution in a series of dimers, classical dimers. And answer is basically called the clustering orientations. So I'm showing two examples of clustering orientations, one on the triangular lattice and the other on a star. This is a honeycomb lattice, but decorated by these little triangles. And this guy is called a fissure lattice. I'm showing the arrows on this lattice satisfying the clockwise R rule. I mean, it's not really important to know how the arrows are assigned. We just need to know that they exist. And it turns out that all planar graphs have clustering orientations, as long as you have even number of vertices. But that's also very natural because we are talking about Majorana zero modes. And in the real system, you always have even number of them. And we put them on vertices of the lattice. OK, so once we have this rule.
Just a very quick question.
Uh-huh.
So by planar, do you also mean oracle?
Sorry?
Do you mean orientable planar graphs?
Orientable, yes. That's a good point. Yeah, all orientable, if the underlying manifold has to be orientable.
I'm sorry. What if you have dimers crossing each other?
Dimers crossing each other. So well, it's a planar graph, so we basically don't allow dimers to cross each other. Okay, so all these clockwise rule, all the rules are meant to be applied to small loops. No. However, if you have some topologically non-trivial surface, such as a torus, you may have some big loops. There are non-contractible loops that cannot be continuously shrink to a point. And for these loops, the rules are actually different. So let's just consider a torus. And since we're talking about dimers, there are actually four topologically different configurations of dimers that you can represent in terms of the transition loops. So you may have you may have just small loops and nothing's winding around the torus. So that's what I call 0-0 sector. And then you have three other sectors and we can just label them according to a winding number of these transition loops around the two directions of the torus. So you have 0-1, 1-0, and 1-1. Now it turns out that all the loops on this in the 0-0 sector satisfy the clockwise odd rule. That's the rule of the game. However, once we demand this kind of local rule, we automatically have the opposite situations for all the other sectors. Namely, if you are in one of these sectors, then this non-contractible loop has to have a clockwise even, satisfy the clockwise even rule. And therefore, if we start from a reference state, well, basically we choose a reference state such that this sector has even parity, then all the other three sectors have to have odd parity. So no matter what you do, this is even independent of the dynamics of system. Once you want to have such a Majorana-Dimer problem, the ground states, well, the topological ground states always fall or satisfy this kind of pattern. And we'll come back to this later on in the talk once we have a concrete Hamiltonian. Okay, so now I've introduced a set of the problem. We want to construct an RVB state for these Majorana-Dimers, and we have solved the first problem, the firm parity problem. Now we actually want to write on a wave function and construct, for example, a parent Hamiltonian on the wave function and maybe study the phase diagrams. So let's first consider a triangular lattice, and there's a well-known quantum dimer models for the bosonic dimers, the usual dimers, the RK model. You can write down, it's a solvable model. Basically, it's a fluctuation-free solvable model. And the model has just two terms. One term is a dimer flip. So you can flip a dimer on the smallest plaque, on an elementary plaque in this way. And I only draw one of them. There are actually three different orientations for the dimer flip term. And then there's also a kind of potential term, potential energy term. So the first term is a kinetic energy of the dimers, and second term is a potential energy. So we can draw a phase diagram in terms of these two parameters. Really, there's just one parameter, V over T. And this is a well-known phase diagram figured out by, I think, Mosner and Sundy, some 15 years ago. And once you increase the ratio of V over T, you have first, you have a columnar phase. Well, this is just an illustration of what the dimers look like in the phase. And then you enter a plaque phase. I mean, the square root of 12 is the size of a unit cell, enlarged unit cell. And then you have an RVB phase for this bosonic dimer state. There's a famous RVB state of the triangular lattice model. And RK point sits exactly at the transition between the RVB state and the staggered phase. And this is the RK point. So this is a well-known, well-understood phase diagram of the triangular lattice dimer model. Now we want to modify or generalize the model to account for the dynamics of the Majorana dimers. So first, I should have said it earlier, but we all know that for example, if you want to represent spin 1/2 singlets as dimers, we know that the spin 1/2 singlets are actually not orthogonal if you compare two sort of dimer states. And we have the same problem here. Two different Majorana dimer states, basis states, are not really orthogonal to each other. So to make our life a little easier, without losing, hopefully, you know, a sense of the physics, we introduce some bosonic dimer degree of freedom together with Majorana modes, so that the different dimer configurations of the Majoranas are actually orthogonal to each other because they correspond with different bosonic dimer states. This is just to solve the orthogonality problem. So now the Hilbert space actually consists of Majoranas on sites and then bosonic dimers on bonds. And the bosonic dimers, we assume they are always aligned to the dimers, the pairs of Majoranas. So we actually work in a restricted Hilbert space where, you know, each basis of this Hilbert space is a tensor product of dimer state with a Majorana state, but they sort of follow the same dimer realization pattern. And this can be achieved by just adding some local energy penalties to Hamiltonian. Yeah.
So this is a basic question. Given the deeper configuration, how do you know which Majoranas? Without, if you didn't have the bosonic dimers, wanted to assert it.
Yeah.
How, like, just given Majorana configuration, how would you know which one has been paired with which?
Well, so the definition is that once you tell me the configuration is basically how the Majoranas are paired. Right. So I call each pair of Majoranas a dimer configuration, basically. A dimer is a pair of Majoranas in a particular state, a directed dimer.
So it's a little bit different from the spin case where if I gave you singlets, you can, right, I can identify which spin is paired with another one by asking, say, find the pair that has zero attainment and the rest of the. So there's a way that there's an operational definition that doesn't rely on just
You can probably do the same thing. I mean, you can look at entanglement between these zero modes, or you can just measure the firm parity on a lattice to tell which ones are paired with the other ones. Although I just choose sort of the easy way to describe it. Okay. Is that clear? All right. So let's look at Hamiltonian. Really the only new thing is that once we flip a dimer, you have to also change the Majoranas so that the Majoranas are paired up according to the new dimer configuration. And that can be achieved by just, you know, exchanging two Majoranas by upgrading. So now this is a term. I mean, it looks horrible, but it's just because we want to write down all different orientations of the plaquettes. So you see four of them. There are three different orientations of a plaquette, but one of them is kind of special because we choose a particular reference dimer states in this way. It turns out that you have to enlarge a unit cell in this case. So the blue lines are the reference dimers, and whenever we do a plaquette move on this particular plaquette that covers a reference dimer, we have to put in an e to I pi over 4 phase in front of it. And the reason, I will explain the reason in the next slide. So once we flip a dimer, we also have to braid the Majoranas. I mean, we choose to do it according to just 1 and 2, you can see from the label, and that's Hamiltonian. So, I mean, the idea is very simple, but the Hamiltonian has a somewhat complicated form.
Why do you need this addition of phase e to I
pi? I'll explain right now. So. And then forgot to mention that there's another term. There's, of course, a potential energy term that don't really involve any dimer flipping. So that will basically take the same form as before. And I'm not going to write it down. So we now have a Majorana RK model, sort of. And we want to know what kind of phase diagram or what is the spectrum of the model. So let's first consider.
Can you explain a little bit more notation? What's the meaning of this U12? It's like a Majorana copy.
Oh yeah, it's a braid of braid operator. Right. Yeah, it's 1 plus gamma 1 gamma 2.
So and what's the definition of S12?
So S12 is basically F12 follows the direction of the custodian orientation. Then it's just 1.
Oh, I see.
Otherwise, it's -1. So it's just, you know, align or anti-align to the custodian orientation of 1, 2. So the effect of this U12 is to turn gamma 1 into gamma 2 and gamma 2 to minus gamma 1.
Oh, so the eigenvalue of this U12 is something like E to I pi over 4?
Yeah, yeah, oh, it's C2 I pi 4 and yeah, minus, plus minus I pi 4. Right.
Oh, that's maybe the origin of this.
Yeah, exactly. So now we want to understand the dynamics or the phase diagram of this model. So what we do is, first let's consider open boundary condition. And it turns out, I have to skip this analysis, but the choice of this E to the pi over 4 phase, although it may look very weird, but once we have that phase, one can show that basically the Hamiltonian of the model can be exactly mapped to the Hamiltonian, I mean, you know, as a matrix, Hamiltonian of the classical, of the Bodonic dimer model, at least within the restricted Hilbert space, where all the dimers and Majorana pairs are sort of on top of each other. So we can conclude that the low energy spectrum, you know, below that gap of the Majorana dimer model is identical to the spectrum of the RK model, at least with open boundary conditions. Therefore, the phase, I mean, in the thermodynamic limit, they should have, they should share the same properties, and we can just copy the same phase diagram from the Bodonic dimer model, and we know for sure that there exists RVB phase in which you have a superposition of all different dimer configurations, the Majorana dimer configurations. And in particular, I mean, that's worth mentioning and will be important, is that this model doesn't have any gapless edge modes, at least if we don't impose any additional symmetries, and we don't. So there's no gapless edge modes, just complete gapped, even you have open boundary conditions. Now, if we are on a torus, we cannot really have this analytical proof anymore, and well, we don't really know what to do, and we can just go to numerics. So while we have done a little better, but I'm just going to cite the result of a 4x4 torus, a 4x4 triangular lattice on a torus. And you can know there are four different topological sectors which you can diagonalize individually. So it turns out that in three of these sectors, which have odd parity, by the way.
Is it just true more generally that, I mean, the RK had two special terms, but say you allowed some other, like Fox and so on, it's always the case of the spectrum of Majorana dimer.
No. This is really special to the particular form of the Hamiltonian that I presented in previous slides. It was kind of designed to have the same matrix elements just for the two terms, the classical. Well, I assume that if you add some other potential terms, that won't have much effect. But if you add some other dimer flip terms, that will definitely change the results.
It's easy to see why, because at some level, not that that's completely the right extent, but you'd say, okay, because you put this dimer onto every, it's like the Majorana state is remembered by the dimer that you put on, so you might say, okay, and you slay the one onto the other. Every time you flip a dimer, you do the associated thing with the Majorana one, so you say, okay, maybe that's why they're the same, but if it's a special property of the Hamiltonian, is it easy to see why it would be different by another time?
Well, at least the way I see it is that, excuse me. Oh, sorry. Let me just pull out the Hamiltonian again. So maybe it's not impossible, but you have to do extra work to for example, putting faces like this, so to match the two sides. I haven't really thought about a general case, but at least you have to like adjust Hamiltonians accordingly to match the matrix elements. That may be possible, but
maybe last question now. Is there are there Hamiltonians within this restricted subspace? Mm-hmm. Like these hops and which don't map to the
RK model.
If you change the phase,
it's not, I mean, it's actually the same phase. The physics is the same, but then you don't have exact mapping between the two models, and we cannot just copy the results of the phase diagram. So that's all we know about all the significance of this phase. I mean, they are not really significant for the physics, but just for the analytical argument, they are necessary.
So then you know to explain that.
Well, open boundary conditions, we can have exact argument.
No, but if you change the phase of it, then you don't have exact.
Yeah. Then we have to go to numerics to, I mean, looks all consistent. But, So on the 4x4 torus, well, on these three different sectors with odd parity ground state, we find that the RVV state and also the staggered state have exactly zero energy, just as what you expect from a dimer model. However, the zero-zero sector is different. And this is purely coming from the dynamics of the Majorana's, because we know that for the bosonic dimer, all these four are degenerate. So it turns out that this sector, which has all, even number parities, has higher energy. Just know with this Hamiltonian, I give the number here, it's not really that important. And there's a six-fold degeneracy. Just this is a geometric property. So the message is that this sector becomes excited state, unlike the dimer model, the bosonic dimer model. And so this sort of concludes a study of the triangular lattice model. And for the rest of the talk, I'll actually consider a different model where we have a better solvability, because that model has a community projector Hamiltonian. So we can solve everything analytically. And we'll see the why we have this sort of funny pattern of ground state in the four sectors. Okay, so.
So for all the model connections, you say that two models have the same phase angle. Do you mean all the spectrum, they are one-to-one correspondence?
Within a low energy sector, like within, as long as you have all the dimers and Majorana pairs on top of each other, then yeah.
I see, but the phase transition might be different.
Well, the spectrums are exactly the same, so all the free energy.
Yeah, but at the phase transition, it collapses. So how do you?
What do you mean collapse?
The phase transition, I mean.
Oh, the spectrum collapse. But it's on any finite size system, the spectrums are exactly the same. So thermodynamics are exactly the same. It's only when only the global properties, such as the ground state degeneracies, become different when you go to a torus.
So even the phase transition belongs to the same.
Yeah, I think so. With open boundary conditions, but then no, to discuss thermodynamics, we don't really care about the boundary conditions. Okay, so the second model has a little more complicated lattice. It's this Fisher lattice. It's basically a honeycomb lattice, but we imagine blowing up each vertex into a triangle. And on the lattice, we have these Majoranas sitting on the edges of the lattice. So each edge of this underlying honeycomb lattice has two Majoranas. And you can naturally associate these two Majoranas to the nearby lattice, or the nearby sites, and call them A and B sublattices, for example. Or you can imagine each site actually has three Majoranas. And then there's a very natural way to choose a reference state without breaking any lattice symmetries, just to pair up the two Majoranas on the same edge. And then you have a symmetric, completely symmetric reference state. And this is one slight advantage of this model, that has a better symmetry, lattice symmetry. And actually, in this case, it's convenient to use a different basis. Instead of dimer basis, we will actually use a loop basis, because it turns out that on the Fisher lattice, there's a one-to-one correspondence between the dimers and the loops of the underlying honeycomb lattice. So I mean, you can basically see from here that these dashed red lines are the dimers. These solid red lines are the dimers, and these dashed red lines are the loop variables. You just imagine you have a Z2 loop variable on each, a Z2 spin on each edge of honeycomb lattice, indicating whether there's a loop, whether there's a string or not. And so this is sort of like a toric code, Z2 toric code model. But there's a one-to-one mapping between the two, the dimer state and loop state. You can kind of see from this picture. So we'll just use a loop basis in the following. I mean, they are completely equivalent. I prefer this language a little better. And we still have the restrictive Hilbert space. So now there's a slight different picture to describe a safe state, is to think about it as a fluctuating loops of these Z2 loops, but decorated by Majorana chains. So you can, for example, follow this loop and see that if there's no loop, then the Majoranas are paired according to these red dashed line, well, blue dashed lines. However, with a loop, the dimerization pattern are basically shifted along the loop, and that's the physics of the Majorana chains in one dimension. So you can view this state as loops all superposition of different loops, but then each loop carries a Majorana chain on top of it. So you can imagine if I break a loop, then I have an end of a one-dimensional chain of Kitaev chain, then there's a dangling zero mode there. So the excitations are somewhat interesting. So now we can write down wave function again. I mean, it's a superposition of all different states as this. However, we had the same problem in the triangular lattice, but now let me just kind of highlight the problem in this case. So even when we write down this wave function, we don't really know what kind of phase you have in front of each configuration. The phase is ambiguous at this point. So to resolve this kind of ambiguity, we use exactly the same idea because we can relate different dimer configurations by flipping dimers locally on a plaquette. So if I start from some reference dimers or loop configuration, I can go to a different dimer state, a loop state, by a series of plaquette flips. And correspondingly, you can imagine this plaquette flips correspond to some kind of unitary operators acting on the Majorana dimer states, and I can go from one basis state to another by acting these unitaries on this dimer state. And if we want to have a consistent definition of phase using this kind of trick, we want to make sure that the result of this dimer flip unitaries don't depend on the order that they are applied. Therefore, it requires these B operators, the plaquette move operators, to commute with each other. I mean, they should obviously commute once the plaquettes are far away from each other. However, the question is whether they commute on neighboring plaquettes. And it's kind of a Z2 thing, so the B square is a better one. Okay, so this is one example of plaquette flip on this lattice. So initially I have all the dimers here, and then by applying a plaquette move, they are shifted along the edges of this hexagon. And once we find these BP operators, we automatically have exactly solvable Hamiltonian, just like, in a very similar way that we have a Hamiltonian of the tutorial code, is that we just add up all these BP operators and put a minus sign. So the ground state will hopefully have all the BP operator BP equal to 1 because they commute, so you can diagonalize them at the same time, simultaneously. So let me write down the BP operators for you. And first, BP operator should have part of it just flipping all the bosonic variables, because we want to flip both the bosonic spins that tells you whether there's a dimer or loop, and as well as flipping, moving the Majoranas along with plaquette move. So this is very simple, just sigma x flipping all the spins. The second operator is a little trickier to write down, and I will only write down the matrix element of this BP operator in the Majorana dimer basis. So this BP operator only relates a certain Majorana dimer state to another Majorana dimer state differing from this guy just by one plaquette, by this particular plaquette. And then the matrix element of this operator is given by basically the overlap of these two states. So you may wonder, this looks like a non-local Hamiltonian, but just to convince you that it's actually local, we should remember these two states only differ very locally. So away from these two, away from this plaquette, they actually look exactly the same. So all that happens are sort of confined within that plaquette and probably the neighboring ones. So we can actually write down a much more complicated representation of the same operator in terms of some local operators, but I'm not going to do that because that's basically all we need to know about this Hamiltonian. So it's very complicated, but it's a local Hamiltonian, and they commute between neighboring plaquettes. This can be shown using this expression, but it involves quite lengthy algebra, and I'm going to skip that. So because we have a Hamiltonian that consists of commuting projectors, it's not projectors, but it's commuting terms, you can turn them into projectors, we have a fully gapped spectrum, even when you have boundaries. So this is similar to a triangular lattice model we have seen, that you have a gapped spectrum on basically any manifold. So we also, again, interested in ground state on torus. And again, there are four different sectors. And this sector, 0, 0 sector, has even parity, and the other three has odd parities. So it turns out that there's a very non-trivial relations between the BP operators. I mean, they commute, they can be diagonalized simultaneously, but they satisfy this constraint. The product of all BP operators, if you flip all the plaquettes, the result has to be equal to minus the total firm parity. Therefore, if we want to have the ground state of the Hamiltonian, which means that each BP has to be exactly one in the ground state, this is only possible if you have all number of fermions, basically, for these three guys. And if we go to this sector, because the product of BP is minus one, one of them has to be minus one. So therefore, it has to have one excitation, one plaquette flipped somewhere on the torus. And this is actually advice on excitation. So again, we have the same kind of separation of, the four sectors. One becomes excited state, the other three remain the ground state. So the ground state is three on torus. So that probably reminds you of icing, since the whole construction is just to bring out the icing, the single Majorana out of as excitation. So it's not surprising that you get something like icing. Just to confirm this picture, we perform the entanglement calculation. So this is by now a pretty standard technique in the study of numerical study of topological faces in 2+1, is that you put a system on the torus or cylinder, and then we can partition this torus where the cut is a non-contractible cycle into two parts. And we look at entanglement entropy of, for example, the sub area A, the A subsystem. And then there's an area law, of course, but there's a correction to the area law, which is a topological entanglement entropy. And the reason that we do it this way is because depending on which state, there are divariant ground states on torus, depending on which state you pick, the gamma is different. And the gamma is actually given by 2 to the log d over dA. So the gamma will tell you the quantum dimension of the topological charge label that's sort of going around in the torus. And we call these states with a definite topological charge label running inside the torus at the minimum entangled state, because they sort of locally, they maximize the topological, minimize the entanglement locally at least. So it's a community projector model, so it's a fixed point Hamiltonian, and we can just take the minimum possible lattice one can ever imagine, which is 2x2. This is a 2x2 honeycomb lattice, and perform this calculation. We can just brute forcefully sweep all the ground state to find the minimum entangled state, and turns out that what you find is three. So we have three of them. And the entanglement entropy takes this value, which means one of the state, this state, corresponding to a dimension that is square root of 2 times the other 2. So you have three quantum dimensions, 1, 2 are equal, and the d3 is square root 2 times d1. And that's, of course, consistent with icing. So from these calculations, it's very conceivable to say this is some kind of icing topological order. At least the bulk looks like icing, because we have three ground states on torus, but that has all number of parities, and the entanglement entropy follows this pattern, and also there's a fully gapped boundary. So we know these three things of this particular state so far, and the only viable candidate is some kind of icing phase. So here is just a summary of the icing topological phase. There are three anions in the bulk, 1, sigma, and psi. Sigma has square root of 2 quantum dimension, which is the third, the d3 there. And they have this topological spin, self-statistics of quadriparticles, 1 e to the I pi over 8 times some odd integer and psi the fermion. So I'll call this state icing to the n. There are actually 4, well, actually 8 of them. So n can take values from 1 to 15, 1, 3, 5, 15. And this state has that chirocentric charge n over 2. So there are some gapless edge modes running on the boundary, which has central charge half, 3 half, etc. So this is not quite the state we want, because it doesn't have a gap boundary, it has some chiral edge modes. So to basically make up these edge modes, or to cancel these edge modes, we have to paste a P minus IP superconductor onto the icing state. The reason that we can do this is because a P minus IP superconductor is a short-ranging tangled state. So just adding some layers of P minus IP is not going to change anything in the bulk of the icing. However, this state does have a chirocentric charge. I mean, we choose P minus IP because it's opposite. So the total central charge of the state is 0. So there's nothing chiral, no chiral modes running on the edge. And but still, I mean, this looks all reasonable, but still there are 4 of them. N is 1, 3, 5, 7. They are all consistent with everything that we have said so far. So let me just make another comment that this is only possible in a fermionic system, because we can have a P-wave superconductor, and this option is basically does not exist if you have bolonic system. If you have icing like quadriparticles, you have to have chirocentric charge.
Why is it so hard to extract this N? Because you have exactly sort of model, probably you can write down some string operator and calculate the S matrix.
Yeah, we just haven't figured out how to do that.
Okay.
We hope we can do that.
So it will mix all the PAA and AP segments.
So I'm only, are you talking about the module matrix? I'm getting to module transformations. Okay, so just to pin down what kind of state we actually have, we're going to do a module transformations on the torus. So this will probe more information about a topological order than just the entanglement entropy calculations. So the idea is that you can, if you have torus, you can perform various deformations of a torus, which cannot be continuously connected to identity doing nothing. And these kind of large deformations of a torus form a group called a modular group. I mean, if you do it adiabatically, they induce a transformation on the ground state manifold. And this transformation can be used to characterize a topological phase. So it turns out that this group is generated by two operations. One is S meaning that basically you sort of rotate the torus by pi over 2. If you imagine the square, then just rotate by 90 degrees. And the T is you cut a torus open and then twist it by 360 degrees and then glue it back. That's a Dan twist. So once you can, if you can calculate how these two operations act on ground state, then we can extract the S and T matrices. They are called modular matrices. And a conjecture, I mean, this is conjectured, but so far no one knows a counterexample, that these S and T matrices will uniquely determine what kind of topological phase you have, at least in the, well, yeah, everything, up to. Okay, so I'm not going to get these little details, but that's in the bosonic system. So a complete theory for fermionic system is not quite available yet. However, the state we have is very simple. It's basically a bosonic system times a fermion topological superconductor. So we more or less know what to expect. The expectation that, well, it's these two sectors are decoupled, at least as an effective description of the system. So we can just multiply these two matrices together. And all we need to know is to figure out what kind of N you have here. So this is S and T. This is S and T matrices of icing. And then we also have S and T of the superconductor. So superconductor doesn't have a degenerate ground state on torus, but still there's a phase. So it's a 1 by 1 matrices there. And then you multiply them together. That's what S and T matrices one should expect to get. And then we can match with our answer from the lattice model to the theoretical, these candidates to tell which N we have. So to actually extract these modular matrices, we're not going to actually deform the lattice. And they can be extracted from rotations, as shown by these two papers, actually, Giffrey's one of them. So you can extract the modular matrices from rotations. And this is possible if you have certain point group symmetries on a lattice. For example, if you have a C4 rotation symmetry on the lattice, you can just do a pi over 2 rotation that gives you S. And if you have a 3-fold or 6-fold rotation symmetry, you can do 2 pi over 3 rotation, and that will give you S times T inverse. Okay, so lattice model we have now is a honeycomb, basically honeycomb lattice. And remember, the wave function actually has all the point group symmetries of a lattice. So we can just apply this technique to extract S and T inverse, times T inverse. So this is kind of raw data you get by doing a 2 pi over 3 rotations, returning a MES basis, a minimum entangled basis. And I mean, it's not particularly enlightening, but you can then extract the S and T from this rotation. So it turns out that we can fix S and T purely from this guy up to overall phase. I mean, because it only tells you S times T inverse. Obviously, you can there's a V1 phase ambiguity, but otherwise, it's all fixed to be this. So you can already tell that this is N equals 1. And then you can also choose a phase to match the result I wrote on the previous slide. So that kind of settles the question for this model, is that N equals 1. Okay, so this sort of concludes the study of this particular model. And for the rest 10 minutes, well, I probably don't need that much. I'm going to briefly mention a few generalizations, a couple generalizations of the model. So there are various kind of variations you can imagine. First, you can sort of cook up a semionic version of the model, just like you have two kind of Z2 topological phase. One is toric code, the other is a double semion. We can do the same thing to our wave function, the diamond wave function, by sticking another phase vector here. It's minus 1 to the number of loops or number of transition graphs for the dimer case. And the rest is basically the same. So once you have this wave function, I mean, you can modify the Hamiltonian to produce such a phase vector. And we can go through the same calculation, and the result is you get a different n. You get n equals 5. So we have n equals 1, n equals 5. And the other generalizing you can do is imagine you have multiple Majorana's per site. And imagine a state where these Majorana's don't really talk to each other, but they are all coupled to the same dimers. So whenever there's a dimer, all these Majorana's, there's all these different layers of Majorana's, they are paired up in the same way, in the identical way. So once you have multiple of them, you get actually many interesting states. For example, if you have two Majorana's per site, we can also say there are two Majorana chains on each loop. Although naively, you may think two Majorana chains becomes topologically trivial in 1D. I mean, the Kitaev chains Z2 classified. However, in 2D, this is not trivial. It turns out that result you get is another, it's just something that's different from, you don't have any decoration at all. It's a U1 level 4 times two copies of P minus IP. And this state was called fermionic toric code by Zhen Chen and his collaborators. They have a different realization of basically the same topological phase, very different realization. Okay, so and another remark I want to make is that this eightfold way, you can actually get eight different states just by increasing the number of Majorana per site from 0 to 7. And this eightfold way is exactly the same eightfold way you see for the classification of Z2 Fermion SPTs in 2 plus 1. I mean, Z2 here means there is a global Z2 symmetry that protects the symmetry-protected phase. So the relation between these two guys is that if you have a Fermion SPT phase and you gauge a Z2 parity symmetry, sorry, not Z2 parity symmetry, Z2 global symmetry, you'll get exactly one of these eightfold ways. These phases. And to see that, Remember that we have free Fermi realizations of all the eight SPTs here, that you take two copies, or not two copies, but two layers, one of them in P plus IP to the raised to the power n, I mean the n of them. The other layer is basically the time reversal conjugate. And we just let the symmetry of the model, this Z2 symmetry, to be the conservation of a Fermi parity in one of the layers. So once you gauge this symmetry, you gauge basically the Fermi parity of the first layer, and we just work in a limit where the two layers are decoupled, we'll get exactly this state. So our construction also provides exactly a full model for these eight SPTs. You can just do a duality transformation and ungauge the symmetry. So this basic model can be thought at the same time as some kind of topological order state, or as exactly solvable model of the SPT phase, community projector model. Okay, so this is a summary of the talk, and thank everyone for attention.
Yeah. This is a technical question. So, here you introduce dimers just because you want to get rid of this null scanning
Associated
with Smart Operating.
Yeah, right? Basically.
So of course, the ground state is going to be decorated RBB states. So, the members are in the simple RBB states, but they are decorated by Smart Operating.
Yeah.
So, can I ask what happened just at the level of a wave function? That if we get rid of these dimers, let's just say we look at the linear superposition, equal amplitude linear superposition of all possible Majorana pairing targets.
Okay.
Will that be just a P plus I P DCSD?
Well, you probably still have a topological order in it, right? You still have a topological order. So it's okay, so I cannot really say what kind of state you get, but if you can remain kind of the gapped nature of the state, you may still end up the same phase. That's a hope.
I'm asking this because we know there is an analogy for parallelism in the RVD case.
Okay.
So suppose we replace the dimers by physical spins.
Yeah.
So for dimers, we know that n equal basis, they're orthogonal.
Yeah.
But for physical spins, then we put two differences together, we know they are not awesome. But I can still ask a valid question. Suppose we take the dimer states, but we retreat the dimer state as physical spin singulars from C1 halves, and we put them in a linear superposition state and ask what the state is. So in this case, you can show mathematically that it's just a projected S-wave state.
Okay.
Or a state permanence.
Okay.
So that's why I'm asking whether you can solve that or what happens to
That's a good question. Obviously, we cannot address that question, so we make a modification to simplify the problem. But actually, the matrix element between the different Majorana dimers are quite different from the spin counterparts, right? The spin counterparts basically have, I don't know, 2 to the number of transient loops, 1 over that. That's, and here you have all kinds of faces. So we don't really know what happens.
Yeah, I agree that a level of Hamiltonian, this is probably much harder to think about this as a sort of a mathematical question for a wave function.
So there are some unpublished results. I mean, not really my results. It's Jung Ho and Jason's results that they took the dimer, the Majorana dimer wave function without the boson dimers and calculate at least a correlation function. So it's still gapped on the triangular lattice. So that gives some hope that you may have the same physics.
Right.
So I just had a very basic question.
Is it related, the exact solvable model that you wrote related to the Kitai-Pinecone model? Is it the same phase? It's not the same phase. So the bulk looks the same because you have icing. But the Kitai-Pinecone model has chiral edge modes. But this model doesn't have any chiral edge modes. So it's actually a different phase compared to Kitai model. So yeah, we also wondered whether this is just a extremely complicated way to get a Kitai model, but it's not, because these two models, although they share the same bulk, but they have different edge physics. So, and actually you can, you're never going to get this phase in a purely bosonic system, like a spin system, because in that case, you have a very strong constraint between the edge and the bulk, So once the bulk is icing, then the edge has to have these chiral edge modes. However, in a fermionic system, because you have these chiral p-wave superconductors, you can get rid of the edge modes. So it's sort of an intrinsically fermionic phase, which don't exist in any bosonic models.
So it's kind of like a Kedaev or Honeycomb model that you face with.
Yeah, yeah, of course. Kedaev model is just icing, the bosonic icing phase. And then the model is equivalent, I mean, just not adiabatically connected to Kedaev model together with another layer of fermionic P minus IP superconductor. So this one is connected to that, right? Because this one is really fermionic. You have fundamental fermions in the system.
Is there, would you expect that there's a family of exact solid modes you could write in connecting them? There's no reason to think that.
Well, we have written a family of them. It's like eight of them, or four of them, actually. Not sorry, eight of them.
No, connected to the.
Oh.
The one that you said.
Yeah, we don't know. We don't know. Because the model actually, in many ways, look like Kitai model, like the way that we put the Myron modes.
Yes, exactly, yeah.
But somehow the dynamics are quite different. Yeah, so the way that these things are paired up may remind you of Kitai modes, but the Hamiltonians are quite different.
And as a comment, could you just say how many, the BP term that you had, how many Myron models does each of those terms involve? Just
So generally, they will involve, well, the number is not not small. So involve all the myronas along the edge of the hexagon and all the legs. Just like in, for example, Levin-Wien model, you have to involve all these edges. So you have to, in general, you have to involve all of them to write down the model, but to write down the matrix, that element.
So for the triangular matrix, you mentioned there's six for the degeneracy
For the excited state.
So that one was fundamentally different.
So the whole sector has the same parity, right? So all six-fold degeneracy, the six-fold just because you can put the bison in different places.
So
they all have the same parity.
The
firm parity is even. So you can also easily understand the fact that you have parity even in that sector. Because, well, actually, you can understand the other three sectors easily because the ground state of the model is supposed to be the same one as the icing cross P minus IP. And we know that the P wave superconductor, the topological superconductor, has all number of fermions on the torus with periodic boundary conditions. So that explains why you have odd parities. The icing is just bosonic, so it doesn't really contribute to the parity.
So in the numerical calculation, you can see this difference.
Well, in numerical calculation, basically you can just do calculations with conserved parity in each sector, right? They're not going to be mixed.
If you do a similar construction in 1D, that construction will be much more simpler if you do 1D, right?
Uh-huh.
Because the orientation is, you don't have that choice of orientation.
Okay.
If you do that, you still have similar effect like the Kedaev chain or.
So the 1D version of the dimer problem is this, I don't remember the name, but it's a symmetry breaking VBF state, right? Like you can have an RBB state in 1D, but it's a balance bound state, basically. It's just a two phases of P plus IP, well, a P wave superconductor in 1D. Yeah.
Just like the action.
Yeah. And you're not allowed to superpose them because they have different parities. There's one more.
The demo models people on top of that once they understand the constructive generation, think about monomers.
Right.
Does that make sense here?
Yeah, of course. It makes a lot of sense. I mean, that was why we thought about these models, that you can imagine once I paired up the myronas as dimers, once I have a monomer, that's a single myrona, right? Single myrona is a non-abelian anion. So that's why we want to study these models, because you can get a single unpaired myronas just by breaking the dimers. It turns out that it's not exactly that simple because the icing anion is not just a myrona, it's an emergent quadriparticle. But yeah, that was the motivation. And I think we can actually study these monomers by writing down the the string operators and et cetera, but yeah, that part we haven't really completely understood.
Could you propose, I think you're at the fixed line of this model, so
yeah.
Could you propose a pre-function reinvention for this model? Because you have people associated with your streams with a lot of minor improvements, but
yeah.
I kind of confused whether you can propose a pre-function reinvention for that model.
Probably we haven't thought along this direction yet. Yeah, I mean, it's a fixed point, so it's already at the fixed point.
But it's really like Jensen's proposal sometime before, right?
It's the further fragmentation. So.
You have because you were using.
Yeah, my model is like a two layer. Yeah,
yeah, it's n equals two model. I mean, the model is very different, so it's hard to compare, really. And we also have a non-fixed point triangular lattice model. So,
okay.